tuned into the motherfucking greatest.
So you hear me all right?
Ladies and gentlemen, front, left, right, back again. Uh-huh. Who is it?
That's crazy, dude. That's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot. And if my computer just starts smoking, I'm not going to be surprised. Back again. Who is it? Well, actually, it's Irish Tightness, your boy with the Subway Domer. The Subway Domer podcast. Josh, it's been a while. What have you been up to, my friend?
Yeah, it's been a long while.
That was actually a rhetorical question. I don't really care what you've been up to.
A bunch of stuff around the house. Got some furniture building going on. Started out making a
furniture. Come on, man. What are you, Amish?
Table for my back porch, some benches, and a side table. You know, I mean, you could tie kind of all that stuff in together this season. You know, how you're building things, you're building a team and all that. So I was thinking about some of that stuff, which sounds cheesy, I suppose, but it's the things that you do during the off season to keep yourself sane. And, you know, other than that, just the kids, I got a third one on the way.
Congrats.
Yeah, which is going to be insane. I never wanted a season baby, meaning in the fall, but here it comes.
Yeah.
So we'll figure that out as it goes. Got the other two rugrats that aren't quite rugrats anymore since they seem to be bossing around. But we've really just been busy with that. I turn the big 37 tomorrow.
There you go. Happy birthday.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I am starting tomorrow. I will be as far away from 21 as I was in kindergarten.
Wow.
Think about that one for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can sympathize there. I turned 37 a couple months ago.
It's been a summer of preparation and really enjoyment. It's actually been quite nice. We've been living in the pool or going up to the beach. It seems like I've been working a ton at work, but what are you going to do?
Well, the only thing I can offer you, having three children myself, is you're going to switch from man-to-man to zone with two parents on three kids. And I'll tell you what, man, number three is a game changer. You think it's just a small incremental step up, and it's not. It's a mind blower. So
see, I was always told the third one's a breeze.
Nope.
Like you already got the
fucking lie, yeah. Dude. Don't believe it.
Oh, God. Man, I've been living my whole life off that motto.
Nope.
The third one's a breeze, man.
This is what my entire existence in the last six months has been.
Like,
you've been living a lie, my friend. Hey, tell me, what kind of lies have Notre Dame fans been living in this summer? Tell me about what lies that Notre Dame fans are living in.
I will tell you what. It's something I had just put in a story I had just put out this morning. It was meant to go out last night, and I literally passed out. But quarterback, the lie that they're living is that things are going to seem normal, and they're not. And that could be for the better, as you know, as well. But here's the thing. In the last 15 years, there's been four seasons where Notre Dame has had this little quarterback experience going into the season. 2000, 2003, 2007, and 2010, which gives them a combined record of, like, I think it was like 26 and 24 for those seasons. That was like the year that it was a Bob Davies season when they started Arnaz Battle. There was a Ty Willingham season when they started Brady Quinn. There was the infamous 2007 season, and then 2010, and then Brian Kelly's first year. So none of those seasons really panned out too great. Although, to Bob Davies' credit, believe it or not, they did go 9-3 that year. So I think the lie that people are living in are that things are going to be so much better because, you know, Golson's gone, and I'm not one who's ever lived under that pretense. And I found it really comical on the first day of camp. You know, we the Sports Illustrated issue came out, you know, and everyone's geeked, like, oh my God, you know, they got us ranked fourth. We're going to playoffs. We got all this good stuff going on, and it's all and it's true. But then you start seeing all the practice reports, this and that, and it's almost like they were shocked, and they shouldn't be shocked that in a kind of like a 7-on-7 setting, the quarterbacks didn't look all that great. You know, they weren't all that accurate at all. The receivers really had to work for the pass. And I think that's kind of telling. That's going to be an issue. I think you are going to definitely see a much more balanced offense than we've seen since Brian Kelly's got here. And that's for the better, I would have to admit. But it's not like this guy is – you know, fresh off the boat. You know, he's been doing this a long time. There's tendencies and there's comfort zones, and there's going to be some play calling that people are going to be like, what the hell? And it may not go quite the way that anyone wants it to go, other than the opposing team, because maybe the accuracy isn't there with the quarterback. So
yeah,
I think the lie that everyone's living is, and the title of my post this morning was Great Expectations, Our Mutual Friend. And I basically tied it into doing a bunch of cocaine at a pre-party before you go out to the club.
All right.
So I use that kind of. It's actually all over the map. You probably know from my writing.
Typical Subway Domer post. Then it sounds out.
Yeah, make you sure know, kind I'm, of a great premise. Poorly
I'll
done.
I'll make sure and, I go and read it. Well, I was
great premise, poorly done. Yeah. And, there's a lot of truth in there about kind of holding back a little bit, but yet still enjoying yourself.
Yeah, you know, I was there the first day of practice. I'll say that Zaire looked a little rough. You know, it's hard to say. Was it jitters? Is he just hasn't improved? I mean, he's not Golson. So, you know, it's unreasonable. Now, I will say this. The receiving core is extremely deep, and they're extremely talented, and they're extremely athletic. And what I saw was several plays where Zaire was a little bit off on the throw, but, you know, Hunter Jr. or Fuller, whoever, was just able to get to it, whether it's reaching behind him, slowing down, jumping over somebody. So there may
so
be
what you're
a little,
telling me is, you th- is
there may be a little more acrobatics involved in just bailing him out a little bit.
Well, you believe our receiving core is probably about as good as it's been from top to bottom.
I think so. God, they're so damn deep,
and
man.
And because of that, you think that can make up for any kind of – not any kind of, but some yeah. kinds of deficiencies.
No, I wouldn't say fully. I mean, it's not going to – you know, hey, if you make a poor decision and you throw over the middle when there's a linebacker that's ready to slide in front of it and pick you off.
Malik Zaire is not throwing at Robbie Parrish, right?
Right. I agree. Yeah, I mean, I think so. So, well, you know, it's
– I agree.
Now the flip side of that is, you know, what kind of temptation is that for Brian Kelly to throw the ball so much to all these other talented receivers when, like you said, a balanced attack may help – protect the ball, keep the defense off the field, because that's a big question mark, and eliminate or alleviate some of the need for Zaire to whip it all over the field?
You know, I think that's a question that we've been asking ourselves for how many years now, you know, about play calling and run pass, you know, percentages. I've been somewhat shocked at the level that Kelly has been, Brian Kelly. But, I don't know. I agree with you wholeheartedly, thinking that the receiving core will help out with it. And maybe Kelly's – go ahead.
Well, and not only that, there were a couple of plays, like when they were doing 11-on-11 kind of stuff, where the play totally broke down, and Zaire is just in, like, full-out scramble mode. Now, mind you, this is the first day of practice. They're in helmets and shoulder pads. There's no tackling. Right. You know, there was one where Aquara, you know, got through and could have clearly blown up whoever the running back on that play was. I think it was Procise. But at the same time, there were a couple plays that they got squirrely. Zaire looked all right, and got he did a little Brett Favre flip pass to one of the running backs. You know, it dumped off to the guy in the middle a couple. So if things here's honestly what I think. Zaire is not going to be as good as Golson, clearly, in throwing that out route, throwing the slant, hitting like all the passes that the quarterback is supposed to make, all these passes, and they're not going to be pinpoint necessarily. However, I think when things break down and get a little squirrely, his ability to improvise might be as good as Golson and possibly better, because he's not afraid to tuck it in run. And I just, for whatever reason, I feel like I have to trust him not to turn the ball over more than I did so with Everett.
Right. I mean, that's my favorite play in college football anyways, is the pass breakdown turning into a quarterback run. And go back and look at.
Yeah, and again,
all I got to do is go back and look at Notre Dame's games, opponents, and look at the opponents' quarterbacks and what they've done in all these years. And it's the killer, you know what I mean? It's the absolute knife in the heart on, you know, on some of these. Well, and with Golson, you got it. Like, you'd get that third and six, pass break down, take off and run, he's got it. It was the 20 yards after that when you would get hit and cough the ball up. So you're like, what the hell? But before that is honestly my favorite. You could design that play. Like, look, just pretend you're going to pass it completely.
Yeah. You tell your right tackle, hey, let your guy go through just to initiate something squirrely so we can.
Yeah, you know, and then just take off and run.
Well, I think, like, I look back to the last play of the Stanford game, right? So Golson kind of dances and moves from one side of the pocket, and he stays on his feet, and he finally finds Koyak in the back corner, and he gets the ball to him on a rope, and Notre Dame wins the game. Okay. Now, that particular play, I don't know if that's going to happen so much with Zaire. I just think that he may be able to dance and move side to side. But I think rather than throwing that frozen rope to a guy, threading the needle, it's going to be more like, hey, take off and get 9 yards.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think the dancing is going to be there. I think it's going to be evasion to a point. It's going to be dependent upon how well he looks downfield.
Yeah.
You know, Golson, even in high school, you can go back and look at Golson State. He was excellent at keeping his eyes downfield as the play breaks down, you know, around him and behind him. And with Zaire, I don't think that's there, you know, as much. But I don't think it necessarily needs to be. I think, you know, if it's not there, he has just a ton of more ability to run the ball than Golson did. So he can, just tuck it and run. Don't even screw around with it. Just go. Go get yourself 6 yards, 7 yards, get out of bounds.
And he showed some of that in the LSU game. It's not going to be, you know, hey, the 10 yard out, the all that stuff may or may not be a huge part as it's been in the past. But if they can run the ball effectively, I'll tell you, and I saw a lot of screen pass, swing pass, little dump off, that kind of stuff will be an extension of the running game. It is. And that's probably a throw that Zaire is going to be more comfortable with, or the coaching staff.
But that's a good thing considering
I agree.
Catching the ball. Will Fuller can do that as good as anybody on the team. I think Torrey Hunter, you can even use that for, dare I say, and this is one of my mortal sins I never commit, but I'll use a freshman's name. You know, a guy like CJ Sanders,
baller.
You can involve him in the offense.
Dude,
right
away. He's a baller.
With plays like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I do think the play action, Zaire, you think back to the Blue Gold game and the ball he threw, and he can launch him deep. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, the arm strength is there. It's just a question of accuracy.
So it may not be that pinpoint precision, you know, deep corner or post route necessarily, so much as it is play action. Get a guy once he's, you know, once you got Breezy or Fuller that's got, you know, a couple of steps on a guy, then let Zaire just launch one deep.
So basically, you're looking for a play breakdown. It's basically Tecmo Bowl.
It's Tecmo Bowl. Do it.
Yep. And then launch it.
And then
go back 20 yards.
Run back and forth, left and right, left and right, and then just launch it as deep as you can. And the good thing is there's guys that are fast enough to run to it.
Well, that's cool. I'm totally at ease.
Yeah. No, I think that's a higher likelihood than it is like a 25-yard, you know, deep slant or, you know, a post route or something like that. I think it's just the launch it. And he's got the arm strength to do it. So.
Well, okay. Now, speaking of the offense, and it seems like we spent an inordinate amount of time already talking about a passing game.
11 minutes.
I think the both of us agree that we're probably going to be running the ball a wee bit more this year. What's the percentages going to the backs? You know, I mean, how much is Folsom going to have to carry it? And you think it's going to be split time? I mean, I'm not just talking about time. I'm talking as far as the carries go. You know, what's the fraction that ProSize is going to get? Are we talking about like a 70-30 thing here, a 60-40? I'm trying to gauge exactly, and I'm excited about having ProSize at running back.
He looked good.
And I am extremely excited about having a running back. More so than I would if Greg Bryant was.
Yeah, we'll flush that out right now. As far as Greg Bryant, talk real fast about that, and then we'll move on. But since he's gone for the year, I feel like we should at least address it.
Okay, I will address it like this. Greg Bryant, and I mean no disrespect to the kid at all, but hadn't done really anything in school at all. If he was rated as a 4-star back coming out of high school instead of a 5-star, then half the fan base wouldn't be clamoring over him as much as they are now. People are basing way too much off of potential rather than production. And for whatever reason, it just wasn't there. He wasn't doing it. He wasn't doing enough of anything to garner that. And outside of that, he was having problems off the field, you know, whatever those problems may be, that was hindering his, you know, his ability to get playing time. So you're talking about a guy essentially who has contributed, I don't want to sound mean about this, but has contributed next to nothing to the team. And, you know, you have a guy in ProSize who has done it all, basically, has been a team player his entire time there, has shown the ability to break plays. And I just don't see what the big deal is. You're 7-1, and honestly, I heard this from somewhere else, and maybe it was like maybe it was an Irish Illustrated's podcast. You know, it might be addition by subtraction in a lot of ways, in that by taking CJ away from the running the slot, you're allowing other guys to play the slot. You're getting more of your players out there. You know, yeah. What I mean, more of your better players and involved. And a guy like Amir Carlisle, as a fifth-year senior, can do a tremendous amount of good for the team. And a guy like Torrey Hunter, who has a ton of potential. And you know, I think this year we'll finally be able to say his name repeatedly each week. But yeah, I'll just leave that with Greg Bryant. I really liked him coming out. I still like him a lot. Hope he comes back and does everything. And I think he could be a really good back. But there's nothing there that can say that him being gone takes away from anything.
Yeah. No, well, and I think it makes the decision. You know, it was the same thing with Golson leaving. It's like, do I want Golson to be gone? No, not necessarily. But if it makes the decision easier for Kelly to just stick with one thing and commit to it, then, you know, maybe it's a benefit. Similarly, Cam McDaniel, Folston, Bryant, who gets the carries? Who's the pass blocker? It's just like now, all right, it's pretty clear. You got Folston and ProSize, unless things get real screwy. Justin Brent was taking some carries when I was at practice. I'm sure he'll continue to. Williams
Although
and Adams looked okay.
I was excited about a two-quarterback system with Brian Kelly. I think there's only a few coaches in the country that –
Yeah,
can do something like that very well, and him and Urban Meyer, one of them. And I was looking forward
But that also takes a commitment from both players to allow that to work and not get their feelings hurt. And I don't know if either one of them necessarily has that in them.
2015 Notre Dame, Zaire Golson was not going to be like 2012 Notre Dame with Reese and Golson.
No, that's
where it worked for various reasons. You know, but. Yeah, you're right. The dynamics would be different, but I still think Brian Kelly does that as good as anybody in the country.
Yeah.
Well, I think it would have worked. But why are we even wasting time?
Yeah,
it doesn't even matter. He's gone. He's a Seminole.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
Oh well.
Life goes on. So
it does indeed.
Back to your question, you know, I think you're probably going to see 70%. I think 70-30 Folston to ProSize is probably fair. I don't know, maybe 20, maybe two-thirds. It's 20 carries for Folston, maybe 10 for ProSize, roughly, out of a 30-carry game. It seems all right.
So, I mean, that seems legit to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think that ProSize would be used. You know, with him, it's kind of hard to – I think it's hard to pigenhole him because he is such a big
that's
back,
the thing.
But he has such elite speed.
They're both going to get touches in the passing game. It's almost inevitable, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I am looking forward to knowing that he is actually my version of George Atkinson before George Atkinson did what George Atkinson does.
Yeah, which is text family members during a team meal. Tell me, what's your level of concern with the defense? I mean, that, let's be honest. We start with offense. We talk about offense. It was all about the offense and half our radio shows last year. But at the end of the day, it's the defense is the damn question mark, and defense is what was, you know, arguably not helping us win games at points last year. We were scoring the points. We just weren't stopping people.
It was an absolute mash unit.
Let's go under the assumption for now that either A, we have the depth to surmount injuries, or B, we're just not going to get hurt. You know, either if that's the case, is Van Gorder finally going to have a system installed and people that can run it, and is life going to be good, or is this going to be another CF like last year?
Well, you asked the question at the beginning of the show, and it was probably the thing I should have said when you asked about fans being proven wrong. And look, just because someone played in a game and played in an entire game does not necessarily mean that is great experience heading into the next season, or that's great for the team going to the next season. Yes, it's great that he got experience, but if it's not the player that you want in that position, that doesn't really matter how much experience he has. I mean, that's pretty sound logic. That I'm not trying to knock the defensive lineman we have, but if you look back into serious playoff caliber or BCS, whatever you want to call the elite, you know, 5-6 teams in the country at the end of the year, each year, the past 20 years or forever, really, they've had really dominant defensive linemen on those teams.
Including Notre Dame in 2012.
Where Notre Dame is stacked up with that. With the guys that they have now, I like Sheldon Day a lot. Put Sheldon Day on, you know, is Sheldon Day in that elite category? I'm not sure. You know, I mean, Jerron Jones is actually, you know, probably our best defensive lineman if Jerron Jones plays like he should. You know, if he plays with a fire up his ass and by all accounts he's healthy. But that's kind of where I'm lost right there. That front four, you know, how well are they going to play? There's still a lot of young guys. Yes, they got a lot of experience last year because of injuries, and that was a huge reason why Notre Dame tanked, was, you know, just the fact that guys going down and young guys having to come in. So I think we'll find out fairly early in the season just exactly where we're sitting at, and to speculate on it now is just kind of, you ain't going to do yourself any favors because you're not going to know. You really don't know how far any of these guys have progressed. You know, you have the known variable of a Sheldon Day, and then you have Jerron Jones playing as if he wants to play football, Jerron Jones. And then that's after that, you're kind of, you know, sketchy.
Yeah.
Linebacker, I think we're set.
We're set.
I think we're too deep for, I think having as many players that can play the middle as what he does is kind of a detriment to some decisions being made, you know.
It's a lot like receiver. It's just there's an embarrassment of riches at that position. The funny thing is how everybody was banging on Kelly last year because they didn't have anybody once a couple of guys went down. But just like you said,
the Joe Schmidt thing.
Yeah,
I mean everybody was convinced.
Yeah.
You know, and I would probably include us in that category where, you know, Joe Schmidt won't last past the first game. Before he starts, you know, and then he turns out to be the defensive MVP.
He is, and he'll probably
be legitimate.
And he probably will be this year too.
Bullshit story on NBC about a walk-on starting. Joe Schmidt was a legitimate, really good linebacker at Notre Dame, for Notre Dame last year.
Yeah.
So to have him back, and I think he's way better than Jarrett Grayson ever was or ever probably is going to be.
He's the key to the defense this year. I think he is. And oddly enough,
Schmitty?
Yeah, and everybody thought that Morgan was going to replace him. You know, it's funny, like you said, that just because guys got time doesn't mean that they're prepared necessarily. I mean, Morgan played last year, but when we were at practice on Friday, you know, Morgan blew a couple assignments, and they were all over him. So it's just like, you know, Morgan and Coney are just like Sanders and Holmes and these other guys. It's like they're going to be great in their own time. It just, let's make it 2 years from now, not right now. If Schmidt can stay healthy, man, I have got the utmost confidence in him.
And honestly, the
secondary too.
The key revolves around the best athlete on the field, period. And that's Jalen Smith.
Yeah.
The key is going to be, how is Van Gorder going to be able to use him to the best of his ability. And with the blitzing scheme like Van Gorder has, that should be, I mean, that should be priority number one. And I'm almost positive that it is, but you got to find that, you know, that scheme has to be cultivated where you're getting a pass rush.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, no matter what, he's going to want to do it. And so that puts pressure on our defensive backs. And I think, you know, with Kavari back and Cole Luke, and I think an improved Redfield, and I think a very much improved probably Shoemate. I think the potential for a really good defense is there. You know, can they stop the run? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I think they could create a pass rush with the right scheme and using a player like Jay.
Absolutely. No, I mean, there's a lot to like. There's a lot
in
of
the college game. A guy like Jalen can dominate the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, there's a lot of pieces. You know, the secondary, Redfield solid, Shoemate solid, Cole Luke solid, Kavari exceptional, Joe Schmidt great, Anawalu or, you know, whoever, Farley or whoever you want to stick at that other side. You know, the line is a little bit of a question mark, and how well the secondary can do is somewhat predicated upon can the line occupy guys and get a little bit of pressure, you know, because
exactly.
If they got a million hours to pick somebody out, doesn't matter how good Cole Luke is, at some point a guy's going to break free. At the same time, you know, I'll tell you, I saw Jalen Smith play in high school a million times. My uncle was his high school coach, the head coach for his team his senior year. And I'll be honest, the guy never played middle linebacker. You know, the same role that he was in last year, that wasn't what he was doing. He was basically, if you remember, Shembo played an outside linebacker, but basically he came up and almost played end. And Shembo,
yeah.
And he may have led the team or was second on the team in sacks that year with Tuitt, I think it was. That's 2012.
Yeah, I think one had 12, the other one had 11.
That, I mean, if you do.
I could be wrong,
yeah,
but
that's what,
that sounds accurate.
You know, Jalen Smith is. Dude, he could play defense. Now, I'm not saying he's got the same girth and mass as a Rochelle or a guy like Tuitt or Ishak or Capron Lewis Moore. Pick a guy. I mean, Smith's not that big, but he's got the physical strength, and he's way quicker than those guys are.
And that's the key right there is the speed. It honestly, you know, when he's up on the line, when he's up near the line of scrimmage, he's not looking to get anywhere near, you know, an offensive tackle.
Yeah.
You know,
you don't want to get sucked into that guy.
He needs to be strong enough to bust up a running back. You know, coming down on a crack.
But I think he can protect that whole outside, you know, stretch or contain anything he wants. And also, you know, I think he's fast enough that, yes, we don't, you know, we'll see how Trombetti goes. We'll see how Rochelle is. We'll see how Okwara is. All these guys and a lot of people harp on Kelly. This is the new, we didn't recruit, you know, depth at linebacker. We don't have a dominant pass rushing defensive end. And I agree with that, but you can do that with Smith if you're so inclined to.
Yeah. I'm just hoping that that's the role that's being played.
Yeah.
You know, like last year, you know, we saw that you had to do one thing because of another that had happened. You know, you couldn't use him for his full potential because of, you know, your roster issues.
Well, then that's the thing. One or two guy gets hurt and that whole plan goes out the window because you're shuffling everybody around. So we'll see.
Yeah. No, it's like stay healthy. Like, you know, we should be, you know, sending up, you know, monetary gifts and buying stars for the trainers of a Notre Dame. Any kind of motivation they need to keep these guys.
Name a star. You know. Namestar.com.
Yeah, dude, we should do that. You know, and for the trainer, you know, don't do it for Kelly or Van Gorder, those guys. Let's find like that. Let's get the trainer. You know, hell, let's do it for for what's his nuts, the equipment guy. Let's go buy a
grooms
star for them.
Oh, groomy. Hey. Jumping out of the team real fast, one of the news items that happened, and I haven't talked to anybody really at length about this, but just the conference thing, do you want to address that real fast? Do you have a thought on that?
Oh, God. It's amazing how ridiculous something with no substance at all can snowball into a large story. You know, like Gary Pinkel, I think, was the first one to start saying it this year, and then it just kept, then ESPN basically just said, we're going to go with this. We got nothing else. Let's just ask every coach we got that exists, you know, about this. So then you start getting all these coaches, Jimbo Fisher, Dabo Sweeney, and they're all on board. Like, yeah, you know, Notre Dame needs to join a conference. I mean, they don't play a 13th game. You know, it's, you know, it's like, it's just like the old Saturday Night Live skit, Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer. I mean, they're like, I don't know, I'm just a caveman. I don't understand how you could compare Notre Dame to Alabama when Notre Dame plays across the country. They don't stay in their own region. How do you compare a team that plays all sorts of different teams and good teams? How can you compare them to someone who plays a cupcake? They don't play a 1-2A school. That's not fair. You know, I mean, they just, they're so fucking stupid. How can you fucking think that any of those arguments that they made, there's any legitimacy into it? You know, in a 13th game, well, hey, you know, we play 12 Division I schools. You play if you make it to your championship game, that's a 13th. Take it top to bottom. What do you think? You know, I would say some years that could be true. I think some years we are scheduled in, I think was a Feinbaum. Someone had actually made a really good point about with Notre Dame's schedule, you never know what you got anyways.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of years you think it's Murderer's Row and it turns into being Cupcake City and you're still losing to these teams.
Yeah.
You know, or it doesn't look so tough and then it turns out like, you know, we could end up playing like an 8. I think it was Stuart Mandel was saying on a solid verbal the other day. He's like, you know, Pitt's one of his teams he's watching. He thinks that, you know, they could possibly be 8-1 when Notre Dame plays them. Could you believe that? And if you look at our schedule, Pitt would be like, you know, one of your middle tier teams at best,
yeah.
You know, when you're looking at it. So these coaches are, and it's all just politic. And I mean, it's all it is. But it serves no reason. Like, look, if you don't win your conference, you're not going to get a chance to play anyways. So these guys are basically saying, all right, there's going to be a Power 5 school left out if Notre Dame, you know, there's only 4 spots. There's 5 Power 5 conferences. You throw Notre Dame in the mix. So there's 2 Power 5 conferences that won't have a team that's in it. So they're basically just politicking for if that rare instance comes around.
They're hedging, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? They're getting that out there now. And, you know, maybe I'm dumb thinking that's dumb. They're probably smart in a way, you know, making sure that it's out there and that's questioned. But there's no sound logic in it at all. I mean, there's just none. If Notre Dame plays, you know, a top 20, you know, hell, they play a top 30 schedule and they go 12-0, or hell, if they go 11-1 with a close loss, there's not a whole lot of argument against them.
Do you like the playoff committee with people, or would you rather the slots be chosen by something like the BCS formula?
I've been back and forth on this quite a bit, actually. Just in my own mind, it's kept me up at nights.
Wow.
But I didn't quite understand at first why we were putting this on a committee. Why it just wasn't like, this is how easy it was that, you know, if you had all this BCS stuff, get a 1 and 2, obviously just take the 3 and 4, there's your slots. But then I started getting more comfortable with the fact that this is a little more subjective, you know, and things that teams are getting credit for at the end of the season, you know, they shouldn't have got credit for to begin, you know, with the computers and all that stuff. So I mean, I really don't know. I really don't have an answer. Right. I mean, I think the committee, regardless of what is sold, everyone's got their own biases built in.
Sure.
Everyone's got their own thing. I think the committee is a strange mix of people. I don't quite understand some of it. I like Condoleezza Rice, and it's not because she's a woman.
Don't diss my girl Condi, man.
It has to do with
I like her.
I just really, the only time her name and college football were ever mentioned together is when Stanford and Notre Dame would play, and they would mention that she went to both schools. I mean, that, you know, and so.
I trust her judgment better than Lionel Tyrone Willingham's.
Yeah, and that's another guy. Here's a guy who has failed at everything. Like, you just keep failing. Like, his job before getting on the committee, he was the chairman of the Idaho Potato Bowl or Humanitarian Bowl or some shit like that. Because nobody was going to take him as a coach again because he killed two programs, two really good programs. Like, how do you keep getting these jobs? So how do you get this job on the playoff? I mean, yeah. He has got to have, like, a file like J. Edgar Hoover, you know, on the country. You know, like, I want this job, man. If you don't give me it, there's the file.
Part of me just thinks, like, could we just have a BCS formula that takes, I don't know, your 10 best games? You know, whether it's a win or a loss against your best opponent, Hey, play 12 games, play 13 games, play a conference championship, play FCS, play whoever the hell you want. The computer is going to take your strongest 10 games and spit out who the six or four or eight teams are.
I find the way that they do it. I'm really put off by their rankings and how early they start putting them out. Like, it seemed like really early to start doing it when they last year.
Because once the Notre Dame joining a conference talk dies down, ESPN needs something else to talk about, which is...
Well, right, because every other ranking system is null and void. I mean, it doesn't really matter what the coaches poll is or the AP. I mean, it really doesn't matter. Those things don't apply. And to be honest with you, once the committee's rankings come out, you start seeing the rankings on the AP and the coaches start just molding around what that is. Exactly. It's almost like a mirror, you know?
Yep.
So, I don't know. It's better now than it ever has been. And so by no means am I going to complain. But I'm actually not in the category of let's go 8 teams, let's go 16. I used to be, I thought. But I thought the way the playoffs went last year, I thought worked extremely well. And there was enough controversy there just between the Baylor TCU Ohio State thing, and then have Ohio State win it all. You know, I just think there was enough storyline
The committee got bailed out for sure because TCU absolutely emasculated who they play, Ole Miss. And if Ohio State had fallen flat, you know, people would have been up in arms and whatever. So, you know, I think they got bailed out a little bit. But we'll see. Do you think Notre Dame's playoff team this year?
They're playoff caliber. I don't know if it'll happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they have the team that can be on the playoffs. But, I mean, like most years, it's a schedule thing. And it's not necessarily Notre Dame's opponents this year, which are – a lot of them are very good, but a lot of it has to do with what their opponents are doing the week prior to Notre Dame.
Yeah.
There's like four or five ACC teams that we play that have a bye week before.
I think I saw half of Notre Dame's schedule has a bye week before they play them.
And then most of the other schools, if they don't have a bye the week before Notre Dame, they play like their biggest cupcake of the season that week.
Yeah. Well,
so it's going to be a lot tougher than it even looks for that fact alone, because basically Notre Dame's going up every week against a team who's had 2 weeks to prepare for them. And that's hard. I mean, these coaches, even at mediocre schools, don't get paid big dollars because they're complete morons. You know, they can take that week, even if they're playing a cupcake, and mold half of that into playing Notre Dame, and they already got the jump up. So, and I'm not searching for excuses here. I'm laying down some facts. You know, this is going to be a tougher schedule to navigate through than I think people are, you know, wanting to say, even though it's funny. Some people talk about how hard the schedule is, and then the next person's talking about how manageable, and ESPN just did that this morning.
You just don't know. BC could be the team that, you know, runs all over everyone, or they could be a complete turd.
And that's a game where you're playing on an odd field. You know, you're playing at Fenway in Boston. You know, that could be an odd game. You know, in Notre Dame, generally, you know, the Shamrock Series games, they've came ready to play. And they've never really got much of a hardcore challenge at them, except for, what was it, Arizona State?
That was a good game. Oh, I mean, they made a late charge. Is there who's the early favorite for People's SubwayDomer.com People's Champ this year?
I don't know. You know, I think I'm going to have to go with Matthias Farley. I don't even think I want to make a question about it.
Yeah.
Matthias Farley, I think, has been one of my favorite players on this roster ever. And for which may sound strange to some people, but I think people forget how good he really was in 2012.
Yeah.
When we needed him to come off the bench and be that nickelback. You know, and then he had a really bad season in 2013. But then last year, he played really, really well. And with those dreads,
he's got the hair.
He's from a state that I love. You know, there's a lot to like about Matthias.
Where's he from? North Carolina?
Yeah.
NC. There you go. Now he's got the hair. I mean, he's the he's a Swiss Army knife of defensive players. I mean, the guy's basically done everything.
Yeah. I mean, there was. I like the guy a lot. He's a true team player. He's a guy. He hasn't played. I don't think he played football 4 years in high school either. So he was kind of a guy that was coming to his own.
He's got the Shane Walton thing going on.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually a great comparison. He was a soccer player. And he just kind of has that, I don't know, just that vibe around him, you know, where he's going to do anything and everything for that team. I watched a video, I don't know, maybe about a week ago. Anyway, it was Notre Dame's 2012 season. And I've probably watched this one like 60 times. The guy's name was Sean Meyer that did it. It was every game all set to like epic movie anthems. Awesome. It's intense. It's great. The Oklahoma game was Rocky IV. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. But anyways, but throughout that whole thing, you see a guy like Matthias Farley just digging in. I mean, every single game. And you can't look past the guy like that at all. I mean, he just, you know, shows up ready. I mean, I'm in love with the guy. I think that is my Subway Domers People champ by far.
He's got to be one of the most underappreciated people too. When on practice on Friday, when practice was over,
nobody talks about. Listen to this.
After practice on Friday, the mob of media goes to Brian Kelly first, then to Malik Zaire after that, then to Joe Schmidt. I'm looking around. Redfield, Breezy, and Matthias Farley were the other three people that were available to the media. A couple people talking to Redfield. I was over there talking, you know, listening to Redfield. Like one guy is talking to, you know, two guys are talking to Breezy. And Farley's like standing over there by himself for half the media session. One guy's over there just, I don't even think they're recording him or anything. They're just shooting the shit with him. And I'm thinking, like, this guy's got more experience than anybody on this entire team that's out here right now. And not a single person's even given him.
Guys on the team.
Yeah.
That is probably a better interview than anyone will ever get. Yeah. They all pass it.
I felt bad because I didn't go over there either. It was just, you know, who do you get to go to the quarterback? And then I was just enamored by Redfield's hair. And I'll say
I'm
this.
I'm telling you, dude, he's got potential. I tweeted that out last night.
And he's, dude, he rocks people. He's knocked out a couple quarterbacks. And I mean, he plays angry, no doubt. I'll tell you
that
what.
That hair has potential to make him an All-American. I mean, he's working on it.
I'll tell you what else does. Nobody will talk about this. Dude, he's got perfect teeth. I noticed it just because I'm standing 3 feet away from the guy. He's talking. I'm like, dude,
Redfield?
Yes. I was like, Max Redfield has some really nice
teeth.
They're
either perfect or gold. They include Subway Domer People's Champ.
He's got great teeth, man. I don't know. That's just, I know that's weird, but I couldn't help not notice it when he's talking. I was like, wow. Wow.
So is his smile as electric as Kavari Russell's?
It's different. It's different because Kavari Russell smiles with his whole face. He's got the cheekbones and the eyes, and everything is going at the same time. And with Russell, you're trying to process how much information he's throwing at you. He's just talking so damn fast. Kavari Russell was the other guy that was out there at media session. The order of mob went Kelly, Zaire, Russell, Joe Schmidt, and then Redfield. Then Breezy, and then Farley's like standing off by himself, like twiddling his thumbs. But
that's fantastic. You know what, though? That's great. That is.
But
that
here's the here. But here's the thing. Here's the thing.
Ready to happen.
But here's the thing about Redfield. He was smiling, but he wasn't happy. Kavari Russell was happy. He was happy to be there. He was happy to be back. He was happy to talk about himself. He was happy to talk about Todd Light. He was happy about everything. Redfield was he smiled at times, but he was very stoic, and he was very intense, and he looks pissed, and he looks ready to hurt somebody.
What do you think Redfield's potential is this year? And I want you to rate it in terms of former Notre Dame safeties. I mean, like, is he like on a Jeff Burris type level this year? I mean, is the potential there for like a Burris type season, or is it more like a like a Zibby?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, I hate to go back and not that I don't talk about other teams, but here's the thing, even for our show.
I'm not asking for comparison.
I know, but even for our show, like, you know, I don't give a shit about, not that I'm not happy about the national championship in 88 or a team in years gone by, but all I'm just, my only focus is right now. And if it makes sense to compare it to somebody else, that's fine. Here's the thing about Redfield. He won't be Zibby because Zibby had so much of the punt return stuff along with him. You know, I mean, that was part of the lure of Tom Zibikowski, was that he's running punt returns back, which we haven't done in, God, seems like forever. Redfield, I don't know. Redfield will be.
I mean, are we looking like a Lionel Bowling type situation?
Who? Listen, I'm talking like a. Man, I don't even know.
He doesn't even compare. I'm not looking for a comparison to. I'll give you the type of season.
Yeah, I can't even say, man. I don't know who's the most touted safety that we've had recently. I'll tell you this. He can be one of the best safeties in the country if he plays up to his potential, and he talked frankly about being benched. He understood why. He came back with a vengeance. If he carries that into this year, I'm telling you, dude, and it's not, it's going to be like devastating Sports Center style, blow your head off hits. He may get ejected again for targeting. I don't know.
Oh, so we're looking at like a Tua situation.
But that wasn't even targeting.
Was it Redfield last year anyways? Where he took out Gardner there at the end of the game.
Yeah, which wasn't even that bad of a hit, but he destroyed Purdue's quarterback when the guy was going to slide.
Yes.
Which is great.
You need those guys.
I mean, I played football. I got a neck injury. You know, I feel, even leading with it, part of me enjoys and part of me just really cringes, and I hate to see very violent collisions because I think that's the one thing that could take football down. It is. It's a nasty part of the game. It's why people wouldn't want to put their kids into it. It's why guys get out of the game. It's not a fun thing to see. However, Redfield is out there looking to just absolutely decimate people, and he can. I'm telling you what, I think that he's going to be known for the. I don't even know who just put the most devastating hits on people. Like, if you think that one hit that Carlo Calabrese had on, God, who was it? Toby Gerhart, maybe, from Stanford, when he ripped his helmet off. Like, that wasn't even a huge hit. It just, you know, like, it was the program.
It was the bonnet baby.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But how that hit is remembered, that's just one of those things that kind of lives on for Notre Dame fans. Like, everybody's going to remember it. I think Redfield will have a couple of just people get blown to bits. Hits that people that are going to be on that highlight reel that you're watching in a couple of years. I think that he's got that in him. So whoever the safety is that was just laying people out, I think that's the potential for the season that he's got.
What about another Fort Wayne boy, Drew?
Drew Tranquil, I'll tell you what, man. Tranquil.
How do you really see him fitting into?
Yeah, I don't know if he does or not. I think he's a lot like Niles Morgan. I think he's a lot like Jay Hayes or some of these other guys. The guys that got reps.
Some of these guys that we saw quite a bit of last year.
They got reps last year, but that doesn't mean they're qualified to necessarily start right now. I like Tranquil. I like his game a lot. I'll tell you what.
Well, maybe not even just not really start, but how much rotation? I mean, you see. I don't see Tranquil. Farley's your nickelback. If you got Redfield,
that's what I was gonna say. It depends how they use him. I mean, he could back up Farley. I think he could do some of what Anuwalu does on the edge. I tell you, Watkins and Crawford are gonna be your corner backups for sure. Safety, I don't know. I mean, Tranquil could be some depth there at safety. Sebastian looked pretty good, but the thing that was most impressive to me.
How cut is that dude?
Sebastian, I didn't get a super close look at him. I know that he was on the water more than anybody else I saw, I think, which was amazing to me. I was like, here's this dude from California who's sweating his dick off out here in the middle of Indiana. Maybe it wasn't super humid either, and it wasn't overly hot, but I noticed him like.
Yeah, but it ain't that Bay Area. You ain't got that ocean breeze.
Right, exactly. I did think that was funny. Now, the thing about Tranquil, I'll say again, I noticed weird.
Georgia. He should be used to that anyways. He's just smarter. Yeah. You know, he's hydrating like you guys are all stupid.
That could be. The thing I noticed about Tranquil, dude, his legs are his hamstring and his quad muscle. I mean, dude, his legs just look like it was unbelievable. And this is a guy who blew his knee out last year.
Yeah, they
all
said they were shocked, but really about his recovery, like how amazingly fast he was.
Yeah, he looked in very, very tip-top shape. So that, you know, that's all I'll say. But again, so I've noticed Redfield's teeth and Drew Tranquil's quads. Those are my takeaways from media practice.
So what's your impressions moving forward? I mean, what do you see? And I'm going to call you out right now. We're going to have to do another one probably sometime shortly before first game. And we should probably do one like every other week, every week.
Yeah.
Even like a half hour, a little like, oh, what the hell.
Huh?
But let's get it now from you a little bit. What are you talking about for this season? I mean, we kind of, I mean, you can list off a record if you want, but I mean, is there any big, huge pitfall you don't think we can jump over? Do you think it's in the bag?
Nothing's in the bag. Like you said, and I think you you hit it. It's like you still don't. I mean, yeah, you got exciting Zaire. You got exciting Stanley and Folston and Procise and all these guys, and it's great. And same with defense. Schmidt's back. Jalen Smith's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. You know, Redfield's got great teeth. You know, whatever. Kavari Russell's back. There's so many things that line up and project extremely well, but college football's a fickle thing, man. You just, until it all gets put together, you just don't know. You got new D-line coach with Gilmore. You got new, OC / QB coach with Sanford. There's a lot of moving parts. Kelly's always done well with chemistry and gelling and putting a staff together that seems good, and especially when you contrast that to Charlie Weiss, who did the most piss-poor job of it.
What, you mean there's no fist fights?
Yeah. But until those things play out, it's just hard to say. And, you know, the wild card to me, in my opinion, always is a team that has something to rally around, whether it's a leader, whether it's a cause, whether it's a situation. You know, that just seems like to be the catalyst of sending teams into hyper, you know, drive and to get that escape velocity, whether it's Manti Te'o and his drama, or whether it's Ohio State and picking up their third string QB, whatever it is, there always seems to be something to rally around. I think Joe Schmidt will probably be that leader, and I can't see how he wouldn't be a captain. Other than that, you know, it just depends on how people step up. You know, and again, you win a couple of games, you get 5-0, 6-0, whatever, and you lose something like a Florida State. You know, do your leaders have the stones to grab the team and pick them up and come back out and continue the win streak, or do you shit the bed? I mean,
and you're under the same impression I am about this team and leadership. There's much more on this team than we've seen the last couple of years.
Kavari Russell.
Remember in 2013. Remember, I think it was you and I, real early on. We both just kept saying it. Like, there was such a lack of leadership. You could see it on the field, guy. I mean, it was a bunch of little things, but it was all like coming from your captains.
I think Zaire's got, you know, a leg up on Golson in that regard.
I think that, you know, and I,
Stanley and Martin, you'd like to believe,
overplayed a little too much.
I don't, man. Just not. Listen, leadership alone is not going to win you games, but I just think that there was such a void in Golson's demeanor. Here's what I don't think you're going to get from Zaire. I don't think after a turnover or adversity or Kelly getting in his face or something not going your way, I don't think Zaire is going to go over and slump his shoulders and piss and moan on the bench by himself. I don't think Zaire is going to do that. He's going to be pounding his chest. That's on me. Let's go back. Let's get him. And he'll go back and he'll make it happen. Now, Golson came back and made some spectacular plays, but his demeanor on the sideline, by and large, was shit. And I don't think you're going to get that from Zaire.
Well, I mean, I agree. I just think because there's the offseason storylines that get grabbed, you know, and rode till they're dead
before
the season starts,
course, is
the whole Zaire leadership thing, which is obvious. I mean, I'm not denying any of that. I'm just curious to know how much more important is that compared to...
If you can't throw an 8-yard pass, leadership doesn't matter, but...
Right. I mean, how important is that compared to doing a better pass-run ratio, you know?
Well, no, I think that's more... I think that, you know...
You know, that's... I guess that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's the... it's a great story, and there's tons of truth to it, and it, I think it will make the team better overall. But is it that big of a deal, honestly, where we're just, because I think that's what has happened. I think that's why I said that earlier about Zaire, you know, when he wasn't real accurate, you know, in practice. I think they were almost shocked. Like, people thought like his leadership was going to will the accuracy.
Well,
there's going to be some things. Well, you know, he's going to have to.
Well, and it's going to force Kelly and Samford and Denbrock to make better play calls, the stuff that's better suits his skill set. And if they don't, they're stupid.
Yes.
You know, and that's been a problem in the past, is that they're trying to shoehorn a guy into plays that don't necessarily fit him. If they play it the right way, they're going to be fine. I don't know. Last thing I'll say here, and then I got to get off. We're up against about an hour here.
Oof.
Is I think double-digit, you have to expect at least double-digit. You have to expect double-digit wins out of this team.
Are you going to ball out? And just, I'll go ahead and say it, at least 11.
If they don't win double digits, I think they will have severely underachieved. And whatever reason that is not going to be good enough for a vast majority of fans. It's just not going to be – whether it's injury, whatever it is. Yeah, I'm just – and whether it's Zaire goes down in the first game, it doesn't matter. Whatever it is, unless they win double-digit games, it ain't going to be good enough for a large segment of the Notre Dame fan population. And honestly, I think that double-digit games should be the minimum expectation from this team. They got all the pieces. I mean, they have so much. I don't know how they should be able to stumble their way through half the games and still be fine.
Well, the over under is set around like what, 9.5? So you're taking the over. I'll take the over on that.
Big, a lot of question marks. You know, I mean, Van Gorder needs to produce on defense. I mean, there's a lot of things that can get sideways, but if this team doesn't win 10 plus games, it's going to be a vast underachievement, in my opinion.
Right. I mean, it's definitely there. And it's not just to win 10 games. I mean, I think you have to win at least 10 games the regular season, but then you got to do whatever bowl game is there. You got to go in there and win that game too. I mean, there's no stopping that. We've had years where Weiss had, those years of kind of wins and then go to a bowl game.
Well,
and get blown out.
And I'll still finally recall those years more so than I will 3-9. And I think that's off the table. Something catastrophic like that. But
no, I don't foresee anything like that. Just saying to look back on the season,
leadership,
and feel like it's been a success. You have to tie that in, one way or another.
Leadership won't win you 12 games, but it sure as hell will win you 3 games.
God, what? 2007, what the hell happened?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
God, what a season.
All right, final thoughts. What do you want to ride out to? You got a music selection. Let's wrap this baby up.
No, I don't. I'll tell you what's funny is, what I've been rocking out to? And it's ridiculous.
Kesha?
It's like sweet. No.
Pitbull?
Just as bad, though. Like Swedish pop.
Swedish
pop? Like Icona pop. I got a 6-year-old daughter.
What does that mean? Like Ace of Base or something?
It's like this generation's Ace of Base.
Okay.
Is that what Icona pop is? Something they don't have the dudes. They might be, but they got like transgender people in a video. I don't know.
Dude, what the hell are you teaching your kids?
I'm not showing her the video. Just the song comes on and it's all catchy. And then she's 6 years old. So listen to the catchy song to keep them out.
I'm going
to
stick with Ace of Base because that's the only thing remotely close to what I know that you're talking about.
It's either been Celtic death metal or Swedish pop.
How the fuck is that a thing either?
Crazy summer.
All right, listen. I saw the sign. Tell me, what is the sign when you see this at whatever point in the season, whatever point in a game, when you see this? Fill in the blank. That's the sign. That's when you know Brian Kelly's got this ship pointed in the right direction. What is it?
Beating USC at the end of the day, 38-0.
There you go.
That's the only thing that's going to have me going to have confidence. Other than that, it's a game-by-game situation.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, folks, that's it. I am Irish Tightness on the Twitter at Irish Tightness, the Subway Domer at subwaydomer.com, or at the Subway Domer on the Twitter sphere. Appreciate y'all listening. Go check out the website. I'm sure Josh has a plethora of ideas and articles on deck for you here this football season.
We're crawling from the gutter.
There you go. All right, my man. Good talking to you.
All right, bud.
Yep, we'll see you. Yeah. Back to back, we'll do this.
coming to me.